And I
Yes,
said,
we
you
always
got
do.
another list. Maybe we could just tap into that.
Yeah.
It's funny. We always talk about, I think, interesting things, important things, but I don't want to give into that. All we talk about is the insanity of the world. There's bad people out there, and they're trying to do bad, and to all of us. And already I've started off by mentioning it, but part of the reason that I'm a geek is because there really is cool stuff in the world, fun stuff to do and read and play and stuff like that. And when I seek out what to read, I read books that end well, not end terribly. You know what I mean? I like reading heroic fiction. I like the conversations I've had with Brynning and Beard are about, we've been in similar situations. There's crime rampant in the streets, or there's the red menace of the communists and stuff like that. And I don't know. As much as it's important that we talk about the geekery aspects of, that's not science. That's not rational. That's a lie. It isn't that I want it to be that all we do is get buffeted by that, instead of saying, to be a decent person, to be a geek, you can seek these things out, and they'll give you that worldview. They'll give you that better way of thinking about the world, that it's not just, I don't know, taking in memes that make you nuts, taking in memes that make you a hater, that make you irrational.
But not only that, we don't just chit chat. We go in depth and talk about various viewpoints on topics. So it's not a 2 minute. So how's the weather? It's pretty good. Yeah, it's raining here, and that's the end of it. Yeah, because we had this warm front and it came in, and you know how it pushes the cold front pushes the warm front. We talk about that, and it gets much more
That's right.
deep than just, so how's the weather?
It does matter that we get into the why it's happening, how it's happening, because how much stuff nowadays is just repetition. This is a terrible thing to say. I'm a relatively humorous guy, but so much where I think a sense of humor comes from is the creativity, the surprise. I hate to repeat myself. I don't think I've ever given the same talk twice, and I've given some talks half a dozen times. I hate to just reel off jokes like a stand-up comic. They can't stand the joke tellers, because that's really all they are, is, hey, I heard a great quote and let me recite it for you. And nowadays, that's what it has become with memes. The science of memetics is all about how ideas are viruses of the mind, and how they survive, they do well because of their replicability, the ease of how you can just transfer it. I don't want to be that. I don't want to be the guy that says, did you see this cute cat video? Or did you read this outrageous? And I do that in social media, I guess, where, but this is interesting. When I post something like that, I almost always comment on it and extend on it. I don't just, hey, have you seen this? It matters to me that some of me is in there, not just that I become this copying machine. And I know that not everybody's capable of it. I know that's a terrible thing to say, but and there's nothing that you can accuse people of more that hurts them than saying they don't have a sense of humor. Everybody thinks they're funny. Everybody thinks they find things funny. And yet you know that some people, they're not quick with a quip. They don't see what makes a
Right.
joke, the contrast and the absurdity, or all the different things. And a long time ago, 2 years ago now or something, I had an interesting discussion because I posted something that I found funny and others didn't. And I got told by enough people, that's just not funny. And it is. And the fact that you can't see how some people could find that funny, it's not an
Wow.
absolute. It's not a one or a zero. It's that there's this spectrum of why it might be funny. And when I poured out all the ways in which you can find something funny, people thought I was trying to steamroll them. And no, it was like the absurdity of when something is not only wrong, but it's so wrong that it's not even close to, that's what they couldn't get either. That their opinion, that their tiny little sliver of way of looking at the world is not sufficient for dealing with the big, messy, complex world. And I guess that relates to a little bit of what we're talking about. Like an old term was simpleton. You know what I mean? Where nowadays they call it one issue candidate, or those kinds of things, one issue voter, low information voter. But isn't that what's going on? People, the first thing they hear is then what they think. That's ridiculous.
It's funny you mentioned that because we've been having some conversations in the household about All in the Family, which is so prescient for today's world, even though it's 50 some years old. So I did not really like and get All in the Family when I was younger. It wasn't until I was in college, I happened to catch a couple episodes. I went, oh my God, I understand this show now. If you take it on the surface, which a lot of people did, I know there were so many people that I can relate to Archie. I understand what he's saying.
I'm that bigot, not I'm
Yeah,
the
but they
kid
don't
being
view it
mocked.
that way. They don't view it that way. He's speaking the way I feel. And what they didn't understand was Archie was the foil to point out in our culture, our society, all the bad stuff, all the wrong thinking, all the, it was a satire on our life. It was a satire on the people that thought and acted that way in a comedy. And we talk about that how many times, how comedy is a reflection of our society if done well. And Archie was it. And so it's running in the house, and me and my mother are laughing. We grew up in different eras than the two 20-year-olds that are 20-ish year olds that are in the house. And they hear, oh my God, this is just a horrible show. It's so racist and bigoted. And it's, I'm like, you don't get it. And they're like, what's there to get? He's just this. And why are they showing this? That's offensive. And I'm like, that's because you don't get it. And they're trying to argue with me at how just this is wrong. They shouldn't even be showing this in reruns. And how can you even laugh at that? And I'm like, you didn't grow up in the eras we did. You're not as experienced in life as we are. There's really no basis you have to judge this show on your limited little bit of thinking from the modern world. End of story. And it's been a discussion.
What I find interesting, many different kinds of humor. Satire is one of them, and satire is really tricky because the most effective it can be is when it hews closest to the truth.
Yes.
It has to be that, wow, that's something that someone would really say. Wow, that's plus that 1% or 2% that make it, oh, now they've gone too far. What we need to show to them is that going too far, people, that it isn't a yes or a no, a one or a zero. It's, wow. Some things can be really funny if they gently mock, or if they savagely mock, they can still be funny, but it's what's the intent behind it? Or it is, I don't know, reading great satires. Have you ever, someone who reads A Modest Proposal for the first time and they
I
don't
haven't
get
read that.
that it's not a, wow, so it's a famous Swift thing about pretty much where we're having population trouble and societal trouble, and probably what we should do is kill and eat all the children. And it comes to it really, and I maybe just enslaves them. I'm teasing about what his proposed solutions were, that he comes to that from like a Socratic dialogue. If you say yes and yes to these small premises, then when you get to the conclusion that seems to flow from them, you're like, but I don't agree with that final thing. Yeah, but you said yes all the way along. And I
Right.
don't know. I think that the reason that satire is tricky is because some people get the joke right away and they laugh and it's okay. And when they find out that they're the butt of the joke because they were agreeing with it until the horrible conclusion, that's a terrible realization for some people that are, they can't handle the ego death of not being right, of not being
Well,
righteous, of
if
not
they even
making peace with
understand
the
that.
person. And that's the thing. Some people don't. I guess that they think, and they can understand that it's bad, so they immediately reject it. But they don't understand that if they look around, there's gradations of that all around them. Every time you have any rule that divide, Ruth Bader Ginsburg just had, let's see, Heather Cox Richardson, a columnist that I enjoy, just talked about Ruth Bader Ginsburg and all the breakthroughs that she made in terms of saying there are all kinds of laws on the books that are opposed to all men are created equal, and men being not men, but humans, that it was never written to be. Boy, I take it back. Our founding fathers, for all of what the originalists will tell you, were products of their times, and they really thought that Negroes were three-fifths of a human being, and that women weren't like capable of voting and things like that. It's taken us 250 years to get to, they just didn't know any better. They did the best they could with what they had, but
Yeah.
now as we've had reality set in, and that women are absolutely as smart and capable and valuable as every man, they had to adjust so that we had all the appropriate things on the books. She was great about getting them taken off, that there was no reason, maybe what brought the Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the notorious RBG article up, was we just had the 50th anniversary of a woman being able to sign on her own with a credit card to buy something. Before that, it had to be approved by a man. only 50 years ago in my lifetime.
Yeah.
Like every time that I say that about, we went to Birmingham, Alabama, and saw where they had turned dogs and hoses on human beings because somehow they were not human. It's sickening, but in my lifetime, those kinds of things have happened. I get weird about this because it's, I just can't believe the kind of human being that doesn't get that, that feels that, that are so wrong in their head, that are so broken, that they really don't get their shared humanity instead of this ridiculous, you're not exactly like me, and so therefore you're wrong. It's weird. And so getting back to satire is really tough when you get to, wow, I was with you for a while, and something luckily had me either reject it or at least know that's not me. And but then it really is, I think satire is often referred to as, it raises a mirror to society. And a lot of people, they don't like what they see.
Right, exactly.
Some people don't. They're blind to it. They're like, that's right. Just right. That's the way it should be. People should be enslaved.
I don't think this movie, this show is funny. You don't think it's funny because you view it as a documentary. Like, it's the truth.
Like that. And it's funny. There's a great book called Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance.
Yep.
That it talks about how do we come to our conclusions, if you will, and that there was a big, for much of the 20th century, it was a deconstructionism, that you take something, you break it down into its component parts, and then as you add them back up, you can see how it was built, and you get to, well, a Socratic dialogue, if you will, if that and that is true, then this is. But he argued that there was inherent quality in things, inherent things that you don't deconstruct it to understand it. You just know from the moment that you encounter it, whether it's true or false, right or wrong. And in a lot of cases, deconstructing actually muddles the waters instead of enlightens them. We have, this is kind of funny, now we're in philosophy class, but the reason that I loved it was because it had so many great examples, and not in a preachy way or not in a too academic way. It was more like, father and his son taking a motorcycle ride and talking about this kind of stuff and all the great ways in which it talked about that, understanding the quality, that is the word quality with a capital Q, how well something encapsulates something, that beauty is its own thing, that you don't get beautiful because it's the right colors and symmetric. And the ways in which we have tried to say that's what makes something beautiful, it's proportionately correct. It that instead, that human beings, maybe animals, seem to have this inherent sense of what makes something beautiful. And that's one of the great mysteries, is where do we get that from? We know fairness from early on. When somebody gets two cookies and you only get one, it might be, you could say, that's because that's survival instinct, and that's because you're learning to count or what. But it really is that there's certain things about how human beings relate to each other, how we relate to our environment, about how we understand what's going on in the world, that you can understand it without being able to explain it, without being able to defend it, but it doesn't make it any less real. And I think that there's a lot of that nowadays, that people, they jump to conclusions and then they use spurious reasoning to get to it. Whereas it, and I guess this is weird, I don't know how people can jump to such a terrible conclusion and find something awful okay. I just posted something about showing razor wire at the border and
putting it
in the river. And I don't know, I hesitate to think that there really are human beings that say, I really would like to keep our border safe. And all the ways to do it, putting in spotlights, trenches, capturing people, that the one they jump to, the one that they find acceptable, is razor wire that somebody could get caught up in and sliced to death and drown in a river. Anyone, especially women and children who that have happened to, that they not only see it, that they not only have seen it happen, but they continue to say, that's the solution. It's going to have deterrent effect. I'm pretty sure there's even laws, in some cases, we put onto the books laws that say, this is so abhorrent that we don't have to argue about what's wrong with incest. It just is. We all know it is. And maybe there's, again, deconstructioning, because we know that creates bad variations on human beings that have, they don't turn out right. You get too much inbreeding in animals, and you can see it happen. And it happens in human beings too. And it's also, if we talk about how the family structure is a very important thing to the human race, violating that family structure in a way that isn't, again, I don't even know that I can go to the deconstruction view of things, but getting to where we have to try to explain things, that the first thing you have to do is like, how is that even a debate? How is it even that you would argue for razor wire?
Here's the thing with that though, Alan. We need to do that because we can't let anybody from another country into our country. We need to keep the original people that are in our country. That's what makes it great. How's that for satire?
So, yeah, and it's funny. Satire and hypocrisy are like joined at the hip.
Yeah.
And talk about, I've had, not only lately, but all my life, discussions where I thought by pointing out that kind of hypocrisy that, yeah, we got to keep the immigrants out. Aren't you Irish? Didn't you
exactly
have terrible things done to you when you were coming over, that you were treated as if you were subhuman, that they didn't want you coming into the country? There's been waves of immigration coming into the United States, and now more and more, this is the dreaded term for anybody who is willfully ignorant. There are studies that say that the reason the United States is one of the most successful countries, and I want to say the most successful because I really believe it is, but I'm just trying to be realistic, is that we've had all these waves of immigration have done wonderful things in adding to the population base, the creativity, the willingness to work, the brilliance, whether it's been migrant workers or scientists, all of that, we really, that thing that we have about, we hold a lamp beside the another one, that it's really important that that people understand that the success of us as a country and the failure of other countries who are now going through ZPG or less, that they're not reproducing at a rate that they're keeping their population, and that they always talk about migration, immigrants, as if they're a menace, whereas actually they're one of the lifebloods of America in terms of how much of all of those things, and in practical terms, how many dollars they bring in, how many taxes they pay, how many construction projects, fields worked, roads built. None of those things would have happened. The stereotype thing is they're taking American jobs. No, they're doing the jobs that many Americans don't want to do anymore or aren't even capable of doing anymore. And all those things are sweeping statements, and none of them are entirely true, but there's enough there that they aren't just here to be abused. They aren't just here to steal services. They're absolutely adding to what's going on. And the fact that we've let immigration become a discussion about, well, it's a necessary evil, and we'll let a few in, then instead we should be, how do we handle this wonderful, constant inflow that we've created by us being the land of opportunity, the best place to come to if you really want to make something in the world, contribute something, not at all in a negative way. You're not coming over here to be a, I don't want to use some of the words.
Because there's too many that we're at the most powerful, our thoughts and our group, our gun-toting, backwards-thinking groups are at the most power we can be. We can't let that go. Everything else must stop. We don't care about anything else. That's essentially what it is. We're going to take our power and demand it stay stagnant.
The fact that they personalize it, Colleen used to have conversations with her son, and her son tipped over into that weird thing of where I'm working. He was like the guy that maintained hotels and schools. And a lot of those things took skill, but he was saying that he was always under pressure. And I'm being kind here. He was, they're coming to get our job, straight out of South Park. And so the way you defend against that is by not having a job that an immigrant, oh no, a less skilled worker could take away from you. Get some skills, join the guild, be so that you're not in danger because of that. Be the one that manages other people underneath you because they want to work. They're not trying to take your job. They want to work with you, et cetera, et cetera. But once that meme gets in there, is that I'm under constant threat, like you just said. I'm at this place in the hierarchy, and anything that happens is going to be at my expense. It's just not true, but they don't care about truth. They care about, it's threatening my livelihood. It's threatening my wife and kids.
They're controlled through fear. There's a great Michael Crichton book called State of Fear that deals exactly with that. Now, it's a made up fiction book, but it's based on the reality of the world. And it's a scary book to read because you can see some of the machinations happening in the book. in the real world. In the book, that these lawyers create a nonprofit and they look like these wonderful people running this nonprofit to help the world. But in reality, they're just doing everything they can to make as much money, to the point where they're willing to have some sort of natural disaster that they caused while a convention was going on, risking people's lives just because it would be an influx of money to their group.
That's apparently what they call that. There's a name for exactly that scenario where you create a disaster that you're going to be the one to solve so that you get to be the hero. And that's it. I used to think that that was maybe like a crazy thought. And then you see any number of incidents where it's, wow, that might play into that, that the reason that they lowered their level of readiness so that it could happen. And then they were able to be the ones I've seen, and again, to personalize it. And it's funny, some of the ways in which stories are most persuasive is not to say studies say, but to say, I've known people. I worked with people at Progressive that I was very much about how do we automate our systems so that they're self-healing, so that nobody has to get up at 2 a.m. to restart a database server because something glitched, that we should be able to do it, that, hey, it checks these various different signs of health. And if it sees something going anomalously, it adds memory over here. It restarts this automatically and so forth. And I found out that there were certain people that they didn't want to do any of that programming and anticipation. They loved being the fireman. They loved being the paramedic that rushes in and gets to be the hero and gets to be like all the skills they wanted to learn were emergency response things, not stop the emergency before it happens things. And my efforts, like it created some odd stuff within the team because some people were willing to adapt and start doing those kinds of things. And they were regularly like, why are you doing this? You're going to put us out of a job. No, it's if you do things that make these things, these 2 a.m. things not happen, then you can work on something more big, productive, futuristic. You cannot get up at 2 a.m. anymore. And some people like, it's a great idea. And others were like, nope, I want them to need me.
Yeah, but the bosses are afraid that they're afraid to get rid of you because if the servers go down tomorrow and we got rid of you, who's going to come in to fix it? Oh, that's right, the servers went down. Yeah.
I'll tell you what's funny is though I was not entirely aided by big management because some part of what they did was those people that really know how everything works. There's somebody at the Campbell Soup Company that knows how to handle every button and every lever that makes soup. And when something goes really wrong, they have to call in old Ed, who's the only guy that really knows how everything runs. Well, they started to make those people like reapply for their jobs. They had become well paid because they had saved the company multiple times and they'd been around long enough to learn all of that, that just the accretion of salary increases and so forth. So all of a sudden somebody came in and said, I don't think that guy's worth, you name it, 150K. Let's see if we could do that with two 75K people.
Or 150K person and just make them work harder.
And so then at the same time that I'm saying you're gonna do these things so that you can work on bigger and better things, management in some cases was saying, we're looking for ways to get rid of you. Don't embed your expertise into a system because then we don't need you anymore. So it took me a while to realize that was in play and that I, as a consultant, had always gone into situations where I'm going to move on to another assignment. I want to leave things behind as stable as they can be. And part of doing that was to make them a virtual Al. If they pseudo think like I do, if they're already ready to respond to the top 10 emergencies, then I won't get called back. They won't they won't object to the fact that my stuff was fragile. No, it wasn't fragile. It's that it made it to number 11 on the bad list. You know what I mean? I hit the top 10, but other people there had been there longer than I did because I came in as the director of databases and there were people who were already there. They had seen a little bit about that already, that people were looking for the more that you like show your cards, the more that you teach other people how you're doing. It really was as if it was that system where if you're a master, you don't give up your secrets equally to the journeyman people. And I that's a very Midwestern way of looking at things. And I had a small city way, Chicago, the West Coast, my way had served me very well. And then I found that wasn't the way everywhere in the world. Right. A lot of what I was proposing that was new was not so much, hey, wouldn't it be great? Won't it be awful if we have to abandon these old systems that let us be the top of our little heap and keep us in a job.
Right.
So I that's humbling, or more like at least realistic to say it isn't only that it always works better a certain way, but that it's actively threatening to some people. And that threat is real, more than I ever thought it was from my experiences. And so maybe those folks that have seen, hey, I don't hold on to guild certifications, I really can get pushed aside. Because this is funny, when you look about all the ways in which we are trying to be certified, I want my like really important skilled and life, like I want my firemen to know what they're doing. I want my surgeons to know how to do. I don't really care that much about my hairdressers necessarily. And yet the amount of licensing that goes into the various different kinds of jobs, it's amazing how much some people have learned how to circle the wagons by making all these license requirements and not and making it so there's an artificial barrier to being declared competent, to being able to be in that field. So why are Lyft and Uber and other ride services doing so well? Because everybody can drive. Everybody can drive pretty well. Maybe in London, where you have to have the knowledge, and it really is an old convoluted city in order to be able to get to places efficiently, you have to know it. But every grid city like Chicago, like Cleveland, you can get around pretty well. And especially in the era, take away all the knowledge of maps, in an era of GPSs, you don't need anything except to be able to drive a car. We've had a couple of Ubers and Lyfts that didn't even speak English very well, that didn't seem to. Would they know how to fix the car? No, they just knew how to listen to the GPS to take us where we needed to go. And so all those medallions that people paid for taxi-wise all those years, tens of thousands of dollars worth, that all in the course of a couple of years became like unnecessary. This became at risk. And so there was big pushback as to what was the reality behind declaring people to be, you have to be pass a test of some kind in order to be able to, a taxi driver. Like it
Right.
was proven to be maybe you were lying all but nah, not lying. You had pushed that paradigm as far as it could, but there was a new paradigm that was going to eat you, that was going to say, no, we now have enough automation of knowledge of where you are, and enough cars are so easily driven nowadays, but you don't need to worry about driving a stick shift versus an automatic. You just get in a car and
Right.
go. Almost everybody can drive almost every car nowadays. You know what I mean?
Even the big
So,
rigs, they're automatic now. There's no stick shift.
yep, there's a lot of that. And it's funny, again, being a geek, extrapolating that, why is there so much objection to like driverless cars, or that is automatically driven cars, that they all the demands of it has to be perfect, there have to be no accidents, that has it, all these things. But that's not the model that we're comparing it to. In the human world, we have, I'm going to grab a number out of the air, 40,000 accidents a year. And if driverless brings that down to 20,000, 10,000 instead of zero, because all the ways in which people are bad drivers, they're distracted, they're not paying attention, they're too sleepy, they make bad judgments. I see bad judgments every single time I'm on the road. I'm not sure about you,
Oh,
but I
yeah.
see people making bad decisions about how fast, how slow, when to turn, how not to signal, all of it. And they want it, like they want to compare it to perfect instead of being the incremental improvement. And I know there's other issues there, like what's the liability issue? If someone really does get hurt, is it
Right.
the manufacturer of the car? Is it the person that put in the directions and just sat back instead of paying a little bit of attention? But then, you know who works that out? The insurance companies. They decide that if you have all of these possible liabilities, then you pay this insurance and it greases the skids for all of those activities to take place. And so I'm hoping that in my lifetime, we will get to not only the quality of those devices being good enough, or that they're good enough in certain situations, like since you talked about big rig drivers, from what I understand, that kind of thing, driving thousands of miles at a time, coast to coast, relatively constant speed, major expressways, there's nowhere near the complicated things going on in big cities where there's lots of lights and people with strollers
Right.
and all the things that you have to account for. The problem set is so much smaller when it's on and off ramps and driving at distance. So anyway, it all ties together in terms of what people demand, in terms of what makes a human being in some ways. And I think that there's guild resistance happening there. I don't know how what it's going to take to finally get people to say, I want this thing of my not having to pay attention more than I want to make sure that I know I'm absolutely safe.
The whole
all the
driverless
convenience.
car thing, if every single car right now was driverless on the road, the amount of accidents would decrease to such a small amount, people would be amazed. It's the humans that are causing more problems than the cars. Yeah, might they get in an accident? Yeah, but I'd rather trust a good, knowledgeable software engineer creating a good car than I'd trust all the morons that drink and drive. I know somebody that had a brand new car and they were on their way to get tags, the new license plate and tags for it. A drunk driver at 11 in the morning slammed into them, slammed into five other cars, wrecked their car, and then took off to get away.
Right.
So if a driverless car hits one thing, it's going to stop right there. You wouldn't
right.
have
And
five more.
Wait for adjudication. Exactly.
Yes. Okay. You know what? We're going to drag everybody down. I have been dying to hear about Madam Web. I really want to hear how that was.
So it was okay. It was not great. It seems a little bit like Sony has properties that they wanted to make sure they got integrated into the MCU so they could still deal with their share, the Spider-Verse share of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It was very interesting, a multiverse type thing, if you will, where...
That's Madam Web. It's very multiverse.
Exactly. And let me think how to say this. I always compare and contrast between the comic books and all the comic books that I read and what they did with this movie. So how did Peter Parker become Spider-Man? Bitten by a radioactive spider and spider powers. They propose that a different way to get that kind of thing is to be bitten by a special kind of spider from South American jungles that actually its venom gives you spider powers. And that some people get bitten that are not the ones that should have powers, that are not a good, noble young man like Peter Parker was. To see an arachnid power bearer as a villain is very interesting, because being that fast, that strong, that stealthy and so forth, it's terrifying. He could be the ultimate assassin if you want to do and stuff like that. Her getting Madam Web, getting precog powers, precognition, and that they're really handy sometimes, but they're also really frustrating, because it isn't that you just see the future and then you can act to prevent it. The future is cloudy and it's one of many possible futures. And if you act to prevent it, the future kind of wants to reassert itself. And so you see all the ways in which she prevents maybe small things, but they blow up on her, or that there's still entanglements based on that. So that was a very good portrayal of, if you really were like able to see the future, it's no guarantee that you'll make a better future, that it's still very frustrating that the pull of events, fate, has some play in it. It's very much a feminine empowerment movie. The heroes, the heroines, are all ladies, young ladies, and they all are just as smart and just as tough and just as determined as any male thing you've had. But there's some cases where it tips over a little bit into being, now they're just determined to make a female analog of a classic male hero, and they lose some of the essence of what makes the character. If you don't have Thor be a male god, some part of Thor is his macho-ness, his blusteriness, his ear. And to get back to Spider-Man, there's Peter Parker being like a shy, nebbishy guy before he becomes Spider-Man is absolutely part of the character, is that he doesn't know his own strength.
Right.
He almost always has restraint. He almost always does the least that he can to make sure he doesn't hurt anybody while stopping a villain, while saving a building full of, a flaming building full of people or whatever else it might be. Some people do it because it's the right thing to do, not because what, the very first issue is, I'm not going to stop him if it means that I don't make any money from it. Oh, well, there goes Uncle Ben, unfortunately. So spoiler alert for those who are not aware of the origin.
If you don't know this 60-year-old storyline.
So a little bit what's going on here is, they take, and I guess I would go with stereotypes, you know what I mean? Of the three young ladies who are also going to be involved in the Spider-Verse, one is like a bookish nerd, one is a skateboarding tough, one is a troubles at home, so lashes out. And I'd like to see the family they create. Another thing that they're doing here is family can be as just as important created as it is in genetic reality, if you will. So It has really good lessons, and it's not at all preachy. It's actually quite good. It has excellent special effects. The fight on the train and various different, it's not as spectacular as an Avengers movie. There's no invading forces from another universe and stuff like that, but it's got very good human warmth. And yet some part of it was like, if you're going to do a variation on the Spider-Man myth, I want it to be competitive. I want it to be that, okay, this is as good as the radioactive thing, if you will, and as good and entering into the multiverse thing, the fact that you can see into multiple futures, they really don't tie into that in the movie. They don't make it that she's the elder Madame Web, not until, and I guess I should say this, it's an origin story. And so, like many origin stories, she doesn't come to be fully Madame Web until the end. So it doesn't, again, spoiler alert, because this character has been around for a long time. A time-tested way of having someone be oracular is that they give up sight, like real sight, in order to have this kind of amazing sight, this foresight. And that's, I think, by the end of the movie, she now has that she's able to see the future better because she's been blinded. And so maybe if they have su succeeding installments in the series, it'll be more like that Madame Web character where she's like the mysterious spider at the middle of the web and she has her fingers on all the threads and can sense disruptions and guide things and stuff like that. This is how she comes to be. So she's nowhere near that omniscient or powerful as she was in the comic books, that kind of thing.
I always feel with
So
the
it's funny. I said it wasn't great. I liked it a lot. It's absolutely worth seeing. But I can see why the public, if what they want is a superhero movie, biff, bam, pow, it isn't that really. You have to pay attention to what's going on. It really does help to know a little bit more of what's going on in the past to compare and contrast it to other Spider-Man movies. It's instead of being a whole new thing, it's a variation on a thing. And I don't think you'll get as much satisfaction if you haven't seen all of what has gone before and say, that's not the way that really happens. Anyway, I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. I always get the feeling with the Sony Spider-Man verse movies that they just throw it at somebody and say, "Hey, you make us a story for a Spider-Man movie." I don't know anything about Spider-Man. It doesn't matter. It's popular and we'll make money. So write a story. Okay, here you go. Director, make this. Okay, I can do this. Let's do this. No, we're the executives. Here's what you need to put in it to have it do this and this because those are making money right now. But that doesn't fit the movie. It's not a good story. Put those in, it'll be great.
The
And then
costumes,
he gets
they have
forced to make
merch.
this movie, and it comes out, and they says, "How come we're not making tons of money? We told it to do this and this." Because the movie isn't that good. That's the scenario I envision like every time. And DC, the same thing. Let's just throw all these characters together. Nobody knows who they are. Doesn't matter. Superheroes make money. Not this one.
Honestly, I think your analysis is pretty good. We've seen any number of things. We've talked about this with Star Wars, that there are some people who really get what makes Star Wars good and others who don't. And yet the incredible determination on the part of studios to churn out Star Wars stuff because it's a license to print money in many ways, but that means you get a whole bunch of lesser things. And then finally someone comes along, Jon Favreau, like I was mentioning with the Mandalorian and stuff, is one of those guys that he seems to get it. When I was watching that compared to any number of lessers, it's like finally someone who understands that whole universe has magic to it and that you have to have the right balance of what's kind of funny to go back. It's not a matter of here's why this and this and this. There's a quality to what they do that you can just tell they love it. They want to share that love with others. It's effective in how they capture the magic of the Star Wars universe. And that's exactly what's going on here. It's really close. Sony just says, we've got these licensed properties. Let's make some money. This isn't the movie that I would say, if you want to know how cool Spider-Man could be, go see this movie. For almost every one of the Spider-Man movies, I would say that. The various different guys they've had playing Spider-Man, even the various different variations of Aunt May from age 80 to age 20, you know what I mean? They've done some pretty interesting variations there. The villains have been Doc Ock is the Green Goblin. There's been any number of good things going on there that someone gets how to make a good movie. And in fact, let me just do a little plug. I went to the Cinemark at Valley View starting like April 15th, whatever that, I think it's a Monday, right? They're going to run all the Spider-Man movies in order each Monday for the next 9 weeks.
Wow.
And I'm going to do it. every Monday I'm going to go and see like the 2 in the afternoon show and just recapture how good the first one was, and then all the way that they work their way through, and maybe they're going to retell the origin, and maybe it's going to be introducing another Spider-Man because they worked their way from McGuire to, I've lost all the names now, Garfield and
Tom
Holland, exactly. So I think that there's a number of comic book movies that I would say to my non-comic book friends, if you want to see how much I love comic books, why I love them, go see Iron Man. Go see that first Iron Man movie, because Robert Downey Jr. inhabits that character so well, and it's got the right amount of heroism and menace and humor and everything else that makes for a good comic book movie. And then there's others that were like, they just don't get it. Sometimes they even had a great character to start with. The Hulk movies are notorious for that. Can be a great character if it's written well. Talk to Peter David about that. But if it's not, if it just is that he's only a brute, that I can't think of a great Hulk movie, whereas some of the Thor movies have been great. And maybe it's because Chris Hemsworth is, again, really inhabits that character well and stuff like that.
Right.
But I don't know, I'm sure there's a ranking of movies that say best to worst.
Ranker.com.
I agree with the people that those really are. It's not only the ones that built together with all the fun end scenes that let you go, oh, I can't wait to see that one now, because Nick Fury is putting together the Avengers. And they really did that first phase of the Marvel Universe so well. Like, that's a huge cinematic achievement to have built in the hunger for whatever the next installment is, and to bring it all together so successfully. And so Madam Web, okay. And if you're a completist, yeah, go see it. Madam Web is the Shazam of the Marvel Universe. You know what I mean? Entertaining, first one good, much better than the second one, but disposable. Like, I just, it was only okay. And right. And especially when you're talking, how much did that one cost? 100 million? 200 million? It must be incredibly galling to make a $200 million that doesn't blow your socks off.
Yeah.
Shouldn't that be like another supernova of a movie?
So you mentioned Star Wars real quick. Colin and I have had this discussion/argument where his Last Jedi was a great movie. I'm like, okay, it might be an okay movie, but it's not a good Star Wars movie. Oh yeah, it is. They changed it. They did things. I'm like, that's exactly why it's not a good Star Wars movie. That's why there are too many things that they just threw away and broke it. I'm just like, that's where Star Wars went bad. But good movies, good franchise. I've seen two of them in the last week. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire and Godzilla X Kong. Saw both are sequels to other movies. So last week I saw Frozen Empire Ghostbusters. Before that, I watched The Afterlife on the weekend to get back into it.
You mentioned that last week. I probably will do the same thing, because I'll go see Frozen Empire, because I think that I want to go see it. I want to see it in the big theater instead of on the small screen and stuff like that.
Right.
But it's definitely like so you really liked it. It's not getting rave reviews, but you really liked it. Tell me why.
So when I watched Afterlife again, I said, oh my gosh, I like this movie even better than when I saw it the first time. And I liked it the first time. I was like, this movie has done so well for a 30-year-old reboot property, or 35, whatever. I'm like, this is enjoyable. So Frozen Empire was very good. Was it, it's going to reach my top 10 movies of all time? Probably not. Will I watch it again? Probably. It's that, it's basically the same style of horror and humor as a Goosebumps book. And that's what the original was. Is it a horror movie? It's got ghosts in it. They're hunting ghosts. But is it got Bill Murray doing the duck walk or whatever?
And Wise, exactly.
Yeah, it's got comedy and stuff. It's both of them, all Ghostbusters, they're designed for families and kids. If you're an adult going to go see a serious, scary horror movie, you're in the wrong spot. This is a fun romp. And Frozen Empire is, and it does it in a very classical horror movie style. You don't even see the bad guy till the last 20 minutes, and then it's all the action and fighting the bad guy. It's build up until then, but it's fun build up. So, good. Yeah.
You know, Colleen and I just watched Wonka last night.
How was that?
And honestly, it's a good movie. It's a good kids movie. I think that Timothy Chalamet is getting all kinds of roles thrown at him, maybe like Adam Driver was a few years. There's
right.
Actors of the moment coming along every couple of years now, and he was charming in it. It's funny. I have a soft spot for Gene Wilder. I really, that is one of those things where, boy, they'll have to really do well. It's like his origin story. But what very much what it is, it's a kid's movie. It's a family movie. It isn't, like, for all that I watch, action adventure and people getting, Colleen calls my guns and explosions movie. It's not the only thing I like to watch. It's very cool to see the craft that goes into something that's just charming. That's like, the conflicts are not going to be someone might die. It's going to be, oh no, who's going to win the chocolate war?
And so,
are the bad guys, is Slugworth going to win? That kind right. of stuff. It's,
so one of the things with the any Roald Dahl movie, which he's the author that wrote the original book, right. James and the Giant Peach and some of the other ones, the one thing that I personally think they miss is it's really twisted, dark humor. If you read the book, he's a little bit not appropriate at times for kids, but he does it in such a way that you don't really catch it. It gets past the censors.
I'll tell you, you're exactly right. I've read both of those books because I read one of those that I had read somewhere a reference like that Roald Dahl, those things that happened to the kids in the first Willy Wonka, they're like tame compared to what he really talked about in the book. He didn't yeah. like kids, especially, bad way to put it. He didn't like shitty kids. He didn't like kids that got away with murder, being the brats they were,
right.
or the little greed heads or something like that. And he really thought, parents, you need to ride herd on them because they're going to turn into bratty adults and shitty people and stuff like that. And so that, yes, some of the what's going on in there, it really was not meant to just be, oh, tee hee, a terrible thing happened. It was like, wow, that kid drowned in a river of chocolate or something. That would be a terrible way to go.
Yeah, the book Witches gets a little dark. Some of his other stuff, he's a little dark and twisted, but he does it in a tongue-in-cheek way, and it gets... But when you really read into it as an adult, it's like Looney Tunes cartoons. Oh, these are fun when you're a kid. Then you watch them as an adult. Wow, they are really making political statements and all sorts of stuff.
Right. And also being able to get into the mind of a kid as to what they find terrifying, threatening, etc. They're not fully grown adults where they have that ability to rationalize or at least understand a lot of things
right.
that are going on. Like just bumps in the dark. Goosebumps is really good at what are the things like, too many spiders, that's terrifying in and of itself. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that there, some authors are really good at capturing that. Like when you're growing up, that just your first experience of things, if it's a bad one, it can set the tone for your life that now you've got a revulsion. You know what I mean? You've got a real reaction to it. Very interesting.
So the other movie, went and saw the new Godzilla X Kong last night.
Okay. Love those when I was young, man. I saw every single Godzilla, Mecha Godzilla versus Monster Zero. I don't know that I have that same love that I do now. And yet you're going to tell me the movie was really good.
It was. So just so everyone aware, this is not the Toho 1950s line of Godzilla movies. That was Godzilla X-1 from last year. And that was that whole line of Toho movies that's got their Godzilla property. That's separate. This is the new line, started in 2014 with Godzilla and then Skull Island and then Godzilla versus Kong. And now this one, it's that line. These are designed to be big budget popcorn movies you
modern.
Can sit and enjoy.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's funny. There is Kaiju, there's movies that are based on that. As long as we have special effects, it can make this real now. It's funny. I wonder how that bifurcation happened. How did they lose the rights? Did they sell the rights?
No, they didn't lose it. It was just, they did that in 99 when they got the Godzilla movie. It wasn't, Toho was just licensing it out. And then after that, in the early 2000s, they kept releasing their line of movies, but they did the 50th anniversary with Godzilla All Monsters Attack or whatever it was called. And it didn't do too. So they literally had said, we're not going to do any more Godzilla. It's just not selling anymore. And right. then they came out with Shin Godzilla many years after that. Actually, I think Godzilla 2014 came out. It's, you know, another company licensed it. Okay, here, go ahead. And it did well. And these are doing even better.
Honestly, it's funny. You're naming movies I've never heard of. And I would have thought that they'd be on my radar. Shin Godzilla. Like, how did I miss? Because I will say this, but isn't that absolutely a movie? If you're going to see it, you want to see it in theaters.
Yeah.
Godzilla is menacing if you don't feel like his roar thundering in your chest from the big vibro speakers in the big theater.
Shin Godzilla definitely has a different feel. It's not okay. The Godzilla Kong movies. It's not quite the old 50s line and 70s movies we saw. It's a little more mature. It's a little more dark. There was a popularity for a while in Japanese movies. They had Shin Godzilla, Shin Gatchaman, and it was Shin something, and they had multiple movies. They weren't tied to each other. It was just that title. And honestly, I don't know what Shin designates and stands for. But that movie revived it a bit. The 2014 Godzilla, it did okay, but it wasn't a blockbuster. And I'm so glad they kept going with it. We had so much fun last night with this movie. Was it a deep philosophical study on the reactions to nuclear war like the original? No, not at all. Was it a big monster? Yeah. Was it a big monster blowout? Absolutely. There was powers and laser blasts and fights with so many monsters. They had Tiamat, they had Shenmue, they had Mothra, they had Kong, they had Godzilla, of course. They had a whole, the Scar King, and he's another ape. So
that's why I love that they keep adding to the pantheon and from multiple cultures, if you will. So that's really cool. Okay.
It was done. It never felt like it was boring and flat or like they were just doing something for the fun of it. The story went really well. Everything looked good. Kong was wonderful. He was the focus, not so much Godzilla, probably because he's more human-like. He thinks he's smart. And you get that. The people are secondary, but there's some characters in there that are great. They have the podcast guy that is all about Titans. He was hilarious. They have this new vet trapper. He's your surfer dude type free will and soul. And he's great. And then they brought the girl back that could communicate and expanded her origin and her story in it. So yeah, there's a whole lot of great stuff in there. And Godzilla, I don't want to spoil where he likes to sleep now, but it's pretty funny. And Kong's down in Hollow Earth, and Kong kind of tricks Godzilla to come down in Hollow Earth and join him, and because you know that shows how much he's thinking. He gets an infinity gauntlet and they explain why, and it makes sense.
I did see that. Now, obviously, it's not the Infinity Gauntlet, but right. I was wondering, I thought maybe that he had broken his arm at one point and that human beings had outfitted him with some kind of like brace and prosthetic or something like
it
that.
It is. But it's a prosthetic. He does get hurt. What is that? Okay. And did you see the Monarch show on Apple TV?
Yes.
And you remember Mechagodzilla from the last movie, right. That group that made all that, they were working on enhancements in cybernetics because they feared Kong wouldn't be strong enough to survive against all the other Titans in Hollow Earth. So they were doing this to give him enhancements so he wouldn't just die. When he gets hurt, it came at a perfect time. Of course, it's a little bit like, oh, he hurt his right arm. We just happen to have the one right arm that we developed. And that, exactly. Okay, we'll stretch it a little bit. We're watching giant monsters. Let's just go with it.
Exactly. Out of all the things in this movie, that's the plot hole that you're going to jump on. Really, that's the unbelievable bit. Exactly.
Right. And speaking of, did you hear that joke meme that was going around last year for the Oscars or this year, whatever? They said, so it's the first time in Oscar history that the movie and its sequel both were up for Oscars. Did you hear that?
No. And which movie?
Oppenheimer and Godzilla Minus One.
That's very good, actually.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. So yeah, it's worth watching. If you've seen the other ones, it's not like there's deep plot points you got to get. Okay, right. I know Godzilla, I know Kong. They fought last time. Let's go see it.
It's one, because they now have $5 Mondays and stuff like that, I had this whole idea. It's not a $15 movie, but it's a $5 movie. Right. You know what I mean? Me and a bucket of popcorn will do just fine if I go just steal away 2-3 hours and go see this.
The theater was packed. We had to sit over on the side. That's all the seats that were left for us.
Oh my, okay. That's I like the fact that these kinds of things have the bigger draw because it means they will make more. And I like the fact that cheap movie day is becoming like people are now counting on it. You know what I mean? It's, I don't know, when I was out in San Francisco doing my dot-com things, and this is 20 years ago, turn of the century, turn of the millennium, like already movies there were like $11, $12, $15. Right. And I was like, wow, that seems like we're seeing so much price gouging nowadays. It's not inflation, it's price gouging. And that's where I had that first taste of, they know they've got a captive audience. They know that people will see even pretty crappy stuff, but
Right.
too much because, and I guess there's some play justify it because real estate is more expensive out in San Francisco. You guys have a 99-year lease. You know what I mean? You guys don't have any. So anyway, it was, I wanted it to be that eventually prices would come back to reasonable. You'd think that the competitive pressure of everybody has a big screen TV at home nowadays, and there's so many movies and TV shows and everything coming out that, like, the in a lot of ways, we seem to have shifted to a blockbuster way of thinking.
Yeah.
Everything has to be a big thing instead of a nice continuous stream of quality movies. Make it for $30 million repeat instead of everything has to be a $200 million movie. I hope that people are finding success in every way. If we talk about this, I see Thomas Howell, Dolph Lundgren, a whole bunch of people dropped out of making regular movies because the studio system wasn't working for them. They wanted to do what they wanted to do, a certain kind of movie, make it for reasonable money. They reap more of the benefits because there's not 100 middlemen
That's
with
what
their hands
Charlie
in all
Chaplin did back 100 years ago.
like that. Exactly. So I'm pretty sure that there's a path to do that and that sometimes things make it into theater. Oh, I should. So I watched this series called Obliterated,
Okay.
and it's off the radar. It's an eight episode series about a team of a special team put together to stop like terrorist threats. And the latest is the Russians are going to set off a nuke in Las Vegas. That would be terrible. They, as you might imagine, specialists in being a bomb disposal expert, a sniper, a surveillance. All of them have their quirks, their oddments, and this group getting together is really immediate conflict and meet cute and who's going to get along and who's not. And they, it's so much better than I expected it to be.
Wow.
And the reason that I thought of it was because C. Thomas Howell is in it. After not
Oh.
having done things for so long, he plays this dissolute bomb demolition guy. It's hilarious how
Wow.
they let this character be such, he's really good at diffusing bombs, and in every other way, he's just a waste of space as a human being. But it was, I laughed out loud multiple times. It had plot twists, much better than I expected. It good, great fight scenes. It's very vulgar. One of those where they people nowadays are seeing what they can get away with more and more on TV. And so they have like full frontal nudity occasionally, and not just ladies, which is like that breaks a big barrier. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? It maybe it happens all the time now, and I just don't watch enough movies. But those kinds of things were like, oh, we're going there now, are we?
Welcome
we're gonna have that kind of swearing
the
and that
modern
kind of
world.
exactly that. Whenever like everybody in the movie drinks and drugs and gets trash and stuff, because I guess if you're under a high stress situation, you have to have your ways of finding release, and it is in Vegas, so it's like they set it up to have, like I said, it's so much better than I thought it would be.
Wow.
And now people will watch it and say, what kind of stuff does Al like? This is terrible. I can't have my kid. No, don't let your kids
It's
watch
like satire. You have to understand it.
Exactly. The fact that they went over the top is because all the movies that we went to a certain place before, this is the one that's going to finally say, we're taking one more step. We're crossing
That's what I
the
felt when I
line.
watched Sons of Anarchy. It was
Okay.
like always, oh my God, I can't believe that they just did that.
Yeah,
So, yeah, same type of
exactly.
thing. So before I forget, there's two movies that Prime has that I've been interested in. The first is the Roadhouse reboot, the old Patrick Swayze Roadhouse, which is a classic that's enjoyable, a TNT type Saturday afternoon movie to watch.
Right. I just watched it as another one that I watch late at night because Colleen doesn't necessarily watch. But honestly, Jake Gyllenhaal, much better than I expected. I don't think
Really?
he's a lightweight, but I didn't have him as being like Swayze, at least was a big buff guy, a dancer, moved really well. Gyllenhaal really has it too. It's really a great movie. And the villain, Colin McGregor, who's really like a UFC fighter,
Yeah.
oh, he's an engine of destruction. He's amazingly good.
I
So,
it's definitely on my radar to watch soon. The other
okay.
one I've heard so much good about, and just the trailer looks fantastic, is Ricky Stenicki. Have you?
No, I haven't even, I when I saw that name, I chuckled because funny name. Maybe there's something about it, but I know nothing about
Okay, so the
it. Okay.
premise is you should watch the trailer because you're going to say, okay, that's on my list to watch. I
All
guarantee it.
right.
It's Mark Wahlberg and
Okay.
some other buddies. They've been buddies since college type thing.
Okay.
There's four of them. Every year, they lie to their wives about their friend Ricky Stenicki having some problem that they all have to go out and help him. But they're lying so they can go to Vegas, so they can go on a cruise, so they can do whatever. They all lie to their wives as a united front that Ricky Stenicki needs their help, and they go. This time the wives, you know what, maybe, and they start.
This happens with startling regularity.
Yes. Suddenly these guys are scrambling, and they hire this transvestite comedian actor who is John Cena to be Ricky Stenicki, just to pass it off that, oh, Ricky exists. Cena takes it a step further and comes back and infiltrates himself into their lives. And it's, from what I understand, it's classic Cena type stuff. If you watch Peacemaker, you'll understand it's that type of John Cena. So I'm like, I got to watch this.
He's another guy that I have gotten much respect for, that more than I had before when I thought he was just a wrestling guy crossing over to movies. He's unembarrassable. He's really got a great sense of humor about himself. And I'm curious as hell. Ricky Stenicki.
Stenicki.
It appeared on like the list of new this week or whatever like that. And it was like, what the heck's this? You know what I mean?
Exactly. Watch the trailer. And I'm pretty sure you'll say, hey, yeah, I got to watch this. I had a buddy watch it. And he went, do you watch it yet? I'm like, oh, I haven't gotten to it. He's like, you told me about it. I thought you were going to watch it. He's, oh, my God, it's hilarious. I'm like, okay. There's
very good. Very good. So, I did just finish The Expanse. I know I've talked about that a number of times. It's really good. If you want, there's some series, you have to give them time. Battlestar Galactica, there's any number of things that, like, it isn't. Each episode is self-contained. There's a universe being built. There's a whole long-term plot being done. This really, it came to a great conclusion. It tied together a whole bunch of different stuff. It's very satisfying science fiction, in that hard science fiction, Werner Vinge way, like that they didn't just say, we'll have a magic thing, we'll just call it mitochondria. You know what I mean? No, it's midichlorians. Ah, that's what
right.
You know what I mean?
M factor.
Yeah, exactly. That instead it's like they make space travel plausible, how they would really have like dogfights in space, like what the effect of gravity, the effect of proto molecules, continued experimentation in maybe the things that get out of control and stuff like that. I don't know that it's funny. One of those things that it took me a while to watch it because I kept watching a bunch of episodes, then I get distracted and go watch Ricky Stenicki or whatever else it might be. But I really wanted to find out what happened. You know, it's one of those things that now that they've laid all these plot threads and stuff like that, it wasn't the characters so much that I cared about. It was more they laid real good groundwork for what would happen if that plays out. What's going to happen if there's a real conflict between Earth and Mars and the asteroid belters, and how do they each use their strengths, their capabilities, and so forth to get leverage on each other and stuff like that. So really like a Michael Crichton book. That he was really into the science and the, you know, like, how do things work? Is that State of Fear that you just talked about? So I don't know that the character's that memorable. You don't fall in love and say, I hope that they get together. They seem like a nice couple. It's more, I want to see the extrapolation of that idea, and that this The Expanse was really good.
And I know the books have gotten very high praise because it's based on a book series.
James Comer, I think, is the author, maybe. I think James Comer. So and it's funny. I must have watched, like, how many episodes are there? Probably a total of 30, 40, 50. I don't know that I want to go read the books now because I've already, I think, seen a lot of what would have been in those. And sometimes I really want to read the books too, because almost always I like the books better. There is more to them. There's depth and so forth. And yet I'm done maybe with it, and maybe I'll return to it. Well, a couple of things I recently got all the laundry file books that I was missing. Charles Stross, who I really like. I just got a whole bunch of books by Emily Kimmelman. I like bought into a Facebook campaign where her tagline is along the lines of "A woman and her dog get justice with a vengeance." I like justice. I like vengeance. Let's go. And they're well written, and they're more mysteries than thrillers. There really is, okay, what's going on? Other pull quotes were along the lines of, like, from a dissatisfied fan, some of the filthiest language I've ever seen in print. I'm in. I want to. How are they going to impress me, who has a potty mouth, a very creative one? So I just started those, and they're good enough. And it's one of those things, like, I bought in because she made an offer that was like, hey, if you want to buy all first 8 books in the series, it's this much. It's like, I ended up buying, and shout out to Emily Kimmelman. I bought like the first set of 8 and then the next set of 6. sight unseen, not having read anything, because the deal was good and the pull quotes were good and all the kind of stuff. And
like
then
a humble bundle.
Like a humble bundle. They took their sweet time getting here. Something happened where they didn't find their way to me. So I wrote to her saying, hey, I ordered these back at the end of January and it's now like end of March. And I know you were sending them media mail, book rate, that it's slow boat type stuff, but I was expecting that to be like 2 weeks a month, not this much. And so she checked and the package got lost in Cincinnati or whatever else it might be. And so in exchange for my doing without for so long, she sent me the next three in the series as well.
Nice.
So how kind of her, like we've talked about when you're an independent author and you're like, how do you build loyalty, readership and stuff like that? It's by under-promising and over-delivering. And she absolutely has done that. And having said that, instead of them all coming in one big box, I got one and then another one and then finally a big box, and it's still not all 17. So whoever's doing her fulfillment doesn't know what the fuck they're doing. You know what I mean? You go to the shelves and you take one, two, three, four, you take them all off, put them in a box and send them to Al. And that's not what happens. So who knows what's really going on there.
Wow. So all right. Good week. So we've got the eclipse coming up, but we're probably going to have to skip next Tuesday. I got a doctor's appointment. I'm going to be out for the day. So probably won't be able to talk about the eclipse till the following week.
Okay. That is funny. We haven't talked about that hardly at all. In brief, many places are doing it. Right here, Cleveland, we are in the path of totality and duration. And Cleveland Area Mensa has a friend that has a farm out in Norwalk that we're actually having a big shindig out at her farm. So it'll be less city light. We're hoping that it won't be so much rain beforehand that her farm fields turn into mud fields. And so we'll see about that. And it's supposed to be, unfortunately, right now, 3 days clear before that. But on the day, it's supposed to be partly cloudy.
Of course.
And, you know, here's hoping that just when it happens, that's just when the clouds aren't in the way. And so it could be a really nice thing. And it could be, we'll say, for those 5 minutes that I really needed, that bastard cloud was right in the way. We'll see. It's an amazing thing. It's awesome. It's really, anybody who doesn't have already, hey, listeners, if you don't have a plan to go see the eclipse, you really should find a way to drive a couple hours and get it to where you can put on your glasses and see this amazing celestial event. It's nothing else.
Yep.
Things that happen on Earth are really cool. The temperature drops, the birds go silent. Don't forget this experience.
It'd be really even cooler if it was real and that the Earth was round instead of flat, if those things were actually happening.
We're just fixing the protective dome that we have over us. Exactly.
Yeah.
That.
Like Stephen King's dome. All right, well, man.
So, hey, take care and have a fun doctor appointment if that's possible. And
yeah, no.
All right. All right. Thanks very much, Stephen. It's always a pleasure.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.